You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Are you ready, kids?
Aye, aye, Captain.
I can't hear you.
Aye, aye, Captain.
Who lives in a pineapple under the sea? It's Ixalan.
That was it.
I was like, maybe eventually I'll recognize the tune and I can sing along, but I honestly have never watched SpongeBob. Like, you know, I think it might have been on a TV in a room I was in, but I was definitely not paying attention.
Well, we're going under the sea, above the sea, into dinosaur realms. Oh, we could have done... Na, 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 na. Maybe we've done that, we've too, done that though. Too. We've yeah, definitely done yeah. that, yeah.
I was going to go... Da-da-dun-dun-da-da-dun-dun-da-da-dun-dun, but we've done that one.
Yeah. All right, so... Hans Zimmer and all the other soundtracks aside, it is time to welcome you to the show. How's it going, everybody? You're watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And it's time.
It's time.
It's time.
It's time.
Get ready to...
Ixalan.
Ixalan.
It is Ixalan set review time. All of the cards have finally been spoiled. Jimmy and I have, well, spoiler alert... The new Game Nights, which will be released on September 20th,
indeed,
is us playing Ixalan with Megan and Maria from Magic the Amateuring. So Jimmy and I have had our hands on these cards for quite some time, and let me tell you, it's been rough keeping our mouths shut. I'm excited to finally talk about them.
Yeah, me too. And you know, part of the production process, obviously, is we have to spend a lot of time to edit and make the videos as perfect as possible before they come out. So we had access to the cards early, and we have finally given the chance to review them for you all. And we get to have a little more experience as well, which is nice. We've seen some of them in play, so that's really cool. Now,
I was going to say, if you want to get your hands on the Ixalan cards like we have them, then you can pre-order right now. If you go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone, use that affiliate link to pre-order all of your Ixalan cards or any other cards or product that you want. You're going to buy Magic.
Yep.
Yeah. You're going to buy Magic cards anyway. If you use the affiliate link when you do, you are helping to keep Command Zone on the air and keep Game Nights, more importantly, on the air.
Now, as is with every new set release, Ultra Pro, another sponsor for the show, also releases products that go alongside it. So I would not be surprised if we saw a playmat for Admiral Beckett Brass or Vona, Butcher of Magan, or Gishath, Sun's Avatar. Or Tishana, Voice of Thunder. So often, a lot of times, they'll take the big characters from the set and they'll make a playmat around the deck boxes and stuff, too. So it's a great way, in case you're thinking about building a dinosaur tribal deck, which I am doing right now. So make
sure.
Spoiler alert. The final way to support the show is through Patreon. And every single week, we announce a new patron from our list to be thank you publicly on the show, in live, brought out to public. Everyone knows who you are now.
Shame.
Shame.
Shame. Ding, 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 ding,
ding. The person we are shaming today is...
Jesus Barajas.
Just kidding. You're not shamed. You are thanked. Thank you, Jesus, for contributing to the show.
Jesus, you rock.
Another important announcement is that this t-shirt that I'm wearing, it's our Game Nights t-shirt.
You can see it has cool text on the back as well. We are told that it is available for retail right now, for sale. You can purchase it now. Spoiler alert again, we are recording this, I think, 3 weeks before before its release. So we're lucky we have access to the cards so we can talk about them. We can't actually release it until, you know, everybody else has officially spoiled the cards and the whole set is revealed. But at this point, we're told the t-shirts will be for sale, available to the public. Now, patrons who meet the threshold will be receiving their shirts for free. As part of their patron rewards. Everyone else, it will be available for purchase. If you go to the show description, the link should be there. Now, I will say, we don't really want to get into the storage business as far as like storing, you know,
merchandise, playmats.
Yeah, I just don't want boxes full of t-shirts like filling up my house. So I'm only saying that to be like, go and order your shirt if you want one sooner rather than later, because we're not going to offer them forever. We're just not willing to, you know, open a warehouse and hold these things. So yeah, we need all this space so that we can, you know, film things.
Yeah, totally. So make sure you check it out in the show description, the show notes. These shirts will not be around forever. They're really nice. They're comfortable too. I really love it.
Yeah, we went through a couple iterations as far as like, you know, nobody ever sends us anything. We're like, yeah, that's good. It's always like, you know, oh, I don't like the tag. I don't want a tag. We want to make sure that the shirt quality is better, blah, blah, blah. So we fix it all up. The shirts are very nice. I would highly recommend them. Okay.
Let's do it.
Let's go to the Ixalan set review.
Let's
again.
Jump on the boat.
Again, I'm going to say this one more time. The entire set has not been spoiled to the world yet, which also means it's very hard for us to double check rules, interactions, and things like that. So I apologize if we get some things wrong.
At the time of this recording.
Yeah. You know, forgive us a little. Give us a little bit of leeway. I think.
I apologize for nothing.
I assume we're not going to make any mistakes because we never, ever do, ever, in the history of the show. Okay. As always, we're going to go over the new mechanics first. There are less new mechanics than many sets we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is Explore. And Explore is an enter the battlefield effect, and it says when so-and-so creature enters the battlefield, you explore. And Explore is reveal the top card of your library, put that card into your hand if it's a land.
Rhymes.
Otherwise, put a 1/1 counter on this creature, and then put that card back or put it into your graveyard. So that sounded a little complicated. I play a creature with Explore. I flip the top card of my library. If it's a land, I just draw it. Mm-hmm. End of story, you're done. If it's not a land, I put a 1/1 counter on the creature.
That explored.
And then I get a choice. I can either keep that card that I revealed on top of my deck, or I can put it into my graveyard. So I sort of semi-scry.
Yeah, it's a semi-scry that could potentially just draw you a card as well, and that card's guaranteed going to be a land. And if it's not a land, then you get a slightly stronger creature, and sometimes you want to bin the card. So I think Explore
all around.
Yeah, that's
a good point.
There's nothing bad about Explore.
Right.
Every single part of Explore is like, sweet, sweet, oh, cool, sweet, sweet. Thumbs up to all of it. So
I think those cards are generally going to be better in
limited
decks. In limited and decks that care about having things in the graveyard.
Right.
Certainly. So if you want to fill your graveyard, you might look at Explore a little more.
Yeah. Raid. It's a returning mechanic from Khans of Tarkir. It triggers if you attacked with a creature this turn. So sometimes it actually is a consistent trigger. So if a creature says raid, and then it'll say if you attacked with a creature this turn, then you do X, Y, and Z. So usually you'll play it after you attack with a creature and it only happens once. There are a couple of instances where raid will continue to trigger.
Yeah, that's sort of different than how Khans was, right? Most of the stuff in Khans was like you played something and it just checked that turn whether you attacked.
Yeah.
There are a couple of instances in this set where it will check every turn if you attack. The third mechanic and final technically mechanic mm-hmm. is Enrage.
Rawr.
I do want to make a call out to my buddy from high school, John Stone.
Hey, John.
Who came up with this mechanic. You've met John.
Mm-hmm.
He invented it, so good job. It's an effect that triggers whenever the creature is dealt damage.
And it's different each time.
Yeah, so it might be like every time this creature deals damage, you gain 2 life. Every time this creature gets dealt damage, you search your library for a basic land and put it into play tapped. You draw a card. You deal 3 damage to an opponent. So those cards are pretty interesting and may have some use. We're not going to call out all of them, but in specific decks where you've got like Pestilence and things like that, those
right.
cards might be usable.
Yeah, there's actually a couple that are really interesting, but for the most part, it seems like more of a standard / limited mechanic.
Limited, really?
Yeah.
All right.
Tribal.
So this isn't really a mechanic, but this is a big theme.
Yeah, huge theme in this. We have Dinosaurs, Pirates, Vampires, and Merfolk as the 4 main tribes of this set. We're not going to go too deeply into the tribal-specific cards. Obviously, if you're building a Merfolk deck, look at the cards that say Merfolk on them and refer to all of those.
Yeah, because otherwise we'd have to talk about every card in the set, and it would just take too long.
Take way too long.
So the tribal-specific cards, like, you can yell at us if you want to, but, you know, we're purposely just be like, yeah, that's a Merfolk card for a Merfolk mm-hmm. deck. There's not a lot to say about it other than, like, hey, if you're building a Merfolk deck, use that card.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, there's one more thing. Treasure.
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 What's your pleasure?
I don't know why it's not called gold.
It does the exact same thing, essentially.
And gold and treasure are sort of synonymous words.
Gold is a type of treasure. Treasure is not a type of gold. There you go.
True. But I mean, if somebody like were to, when you picture treasure in your head, what percentage of it is gold?
Diamonds. That wasn't an answer. Most of it.
Yeah, like 80.
Or made of gold, golden circlets.
Okay.
Like, I think of Smaug's dungeon.
Smaug, yeah.
Smaug.
Or Smaug. I used to call it Smaug when I was a kid, and then I learned from Peter Jackson that it's Smaug.
In LA, we call it Smaug. All right. yeah, it's essentially gold, but a lot of cards create it, and a lot of cards create treasure, either through different effects, but you can tap and sacrifice to add 1 color of any mana to your mana pool. And to speed, it's an artifact.
So that's not a mechanic,
but
whatever.
There's a lot of it in this set.
All right, let's start where we always start, which is the new legends, the new legendary creatures. There are 4 of them, and they are somewhat tribal. They all are from a tribe, and yeah. some of them care about a tribe more than others. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yep. So, also, by the way, the tribes very fall very clearly into certain colors and archetypes. Or not archetypes, just colors. So, the pirates are going to be Grixis. So, blue, black, and red, and one for this First Admiral Beckett Brass. Legendary creature, human pirate. Now, Beckett Brass, she looks awesome. She's a 3/3. Other pirates you control get +1/+1, so she's a lord. At the beginning of your end step, gain control of target non-land permanent controlled by a player who was dealt combat damage by 3 or more pirates this turn. I got less interested in the card as it went along. So at the beginning of your end step,
You mean you liked all your pirates get buffed?
I like all your pirates get buffed and gain control of target non-land permanent controlled by a player. And then as soon as it said who was dealt combat damage by 3 or more pirates this turn.
Three?
That's tough.
Three? Two would have been reasonable.
Yeah, but the thing is it's combat damage, so it's not damage to a player, which is nice. So that means you just need to swing with 3 pirates at someone. If none of them get killed, then you actually get to steal a non-land permanent from that player.
What do you mean it's combat damage, so it's not damage to a player?
As in, like, you can do combat damage to a creature.
No, well, the player has to be dealt
combat
damage.
I'm so sorry.
Damage, yeah.
This card got even unhappier.
Yeah,
because
it's by a player who was dealt combat damage.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So, yeah, it's a little different phrasing. So it's not wonderful because you have to deal three creatures have to get through and do damage. Holy crap.
I mean, I could see a deck where you got extra combat phases because you don't have to deal it all at once, right? So if on the second combat phase, you hit him with the third pirate, you
well,
can
we're
take
dreaming
something.
Big if we're talking about extra combat phases
I'm just
right
saying,
now.
I'm just saying. You use unblockable and like intimidate and stuff and maybe you get there.
Right.
It seems like a lot of work to steal a permanent and there's easier ways to do it.
Yeah, the main issue is that you're just never going to really find someone that's open enough for you to get 3 creatures through. Like someone's going to have a 0/3 or a 2/2 or a 1/5. You know, there's going to be something to stop your pirates unless you have 1,000 of them, in which case, great. But at that point,
just how often are you just indiscriminately hitting people with 3 creatures? It's very rare. I'll tell you, I've edited 10 episodes of Game Nights.
Yeah.
Combat itself is actually pretty rare. And yeah. somebody getting hit with 3 creatures is extremely rare.
Yeah. But here's the thing. If you're going to make this deck, you're obviously going to make it to work with that. So you're going to have a lot of tokens, pirate tokens, ways to get in for damage.
Here's the real question.
Yeah.
Is it better than Ramirez de Pietro?
What's Ramirez do again?
Nothing.
Oh.
He's got like first strike. So, yeah, it's better.
It's
so, got
to be better, yeah.
Yeah. It has an additional color.
It
gives all your pirates
plus one.
Like,
what kind of question was that?
I was just saying, it's still an upgrade to the pirate legendary have right now.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
All right, the next one is Vona. Vana?
Vona.
Vona, Butcher of Magan.
About ready to go on a trip.
Vona is doing the George Washington thing a little bit.
Yeah, it's very revolutionary right there.
Yeah, so Vona is 3 white and a black, 5 mana total for a 4/4 legendary creature, vampire knight.
Cool.
Like Edgar. Vigilance and lifelink.
Cool.
5 mana, 4/4 vigi, lifelink, pretty good. You can tap Vona, pay 7 life.
Okay.
Destroy target non-land permanent. Oh, okay. Activate this ability only during your turn. So you vindicate?
Destroy target non-land permanent, yeah. That's sorcery speed.
Oh, vindicate. Well, you utter end? No, it's not destroy.
It's your turn speed. So you can use it at instant speed, like attack and then use the ability.
Yep.
Or attack, get the lifelink, and then use the ability.
You're right. It's not sorcery speed because it's your turn speed. 7 life? That's a lot.
I mean, not if you have 40. Here's the thing.
It's still a lot if you're at 40.
If you're playing a vampire tribal deck, or even just black-white, you're probably... I mean, like, all the black-white commanders, all the black-white... cards that are really powerful in Commander often have some kind of lifelink attached to them, I feel like.
Well,
like Karloff,
Vona
Uncle
has
Karl
lifelink.
And stuff. Yeah, Vona has
Maybe
lifelink.
Maybe this goes in a Karloff deck or an Ailey deck, but I don't know if it's better than either of those as your commander, right?
Yeah, Ailey, I agree.
Karloff.
This is
they
definitely...
They blow stuff up, it seems like, more easily.
I'd want to put this in a deck that can give it haste as well.
Yeah,
so,
which you're in white-black. It's hard to give it haste.
But Edgar Markov would be a good deck for this as well.
Would it?
I don't know. To be
okay.
in there.
I guess so.
I mean, here's the thing. Being able to destroy a target non-land permanent in, let's say, red, white, black, do they have many options for doing that otherwise? Oh, they have Vindicate, don't
they? Yeah, they got Utter End. They got Vindicate. They got actually, they have the best options, and they exile stuff.
People are looking for us to be positive about cards on this show, Josh.
Sorry.
I don't know. I mean, Vona's okay.
Yep. I think Admiral Beckett Brass actually is better than Vona as far as like bringing something new to the table that we haven't been on. Like that, you can build a pirate deck where you really kind of couldn't before. Mm-hmm. And Vona doesn't do anything that other cards don't do better already. Sorry. True. Sorry.
No, that's
I'll try and be more positive from here out, but I'm just going to give honest evaluations.
Well, you know what? Here comes an 8-mana card that's going to blow your mind.
Oh, this one has a theme song too.
It is Gishoth, Sun's Avatar.
I like how you turn it into like a dance song. Welcome.
I'm a dinosaur. I'm a dinosaur. I'm a dinosaur.
We've
That's
recorded
me.
Three podcasts in a row today, and we might be getting a little loopy.
So Gishoth, Sun's Avatar. It looks like the mega dino that was in the newest
it
Jurassic
does,
World.
The one that was like genetically created.
Yeah.
Yeah, by Bryce Dallas Howard.
Those high heels can do a lot of work. It's 5 red, green, and a white for a 7/6 legendary creature Dino Avatar. Sick. This is going to be my commander.
It's got 8-mana 7/6.
I've never had a Naya deck before, though, so may as well, right? So it's Trample, Vigilance, Haste.
That's good. That's good.
Trample, Vigilance. Whoop, whoop.
Trample
is it 7/6?
And Haste. Yeah. So it just comes out and smashes right away. I like that.
And whenever Gishoth deals combat damage to a player, reveal that many cards from the top of your library. Put any number of dinosaur creature cards from among them onto the battlefield.
It draws cards.
And the rest
sort of Dapalas.
It doesn't draw them. It puts them on the battlefield.
Oh, onto the battlefield. Oh, crap. Yeah. I didn't even... Oh,
and
onto
the rest,
battlefield.
And the rest of them on the bottom of your library in a random order.
Put any number, doesn't care about casting cards.
Yeah.
Oh, now this is a card.
Yeah, so you
because it has trample.
Yeah,
it's so gonna hit him.
It's a tribal deck. You play it with the guy that reduces cost by 2, so you can play this for 6-mana instead. And
you play a little bit of ramp. You've got green. It's not gonna be that hard.
You got scroll rack.
Turn 5 or so. You boom smash. They either block or they take it. You look at the top 7 cards.
You boom smash, and if they block like 5 of it, you're like, sweet. I'm only gonna scroll rack 5 cards to the top of my library, and they're all dinosaur creatures.
Oh, okay. Done. See, this card has card draw and cheating of mana cost on it. Now, the question that has to be answered for this card is, are there enough dinosaurs?
Yes. I know for a fact, and at the time of this recording, we don't know, but Wizards is going back and re-eroding some cards to be dinosaurs.
Yeah, so they've
dinosaurs.
Announced on Twitter, the various Wizards personalities, like Forsyth and some people, have said that they're going to go back and... They've done this in the past for like Spirits and some other tribes to sort of...
Right.
Make that tribe more robust so you can build decks around it. And so they're going to go back and take things in the past that obviously are dinosaurs, but just don't have the creature to subtype dinosaur and errata them, which means that they'll officially be counted as dinosaurs.
Yeah.
But yeah, right now they haven't announced to us what those are going to be. Yeah, that's a good one.
I think Deathmiss Raptor has to be one.
Yeah, it's a raptor.
It literally says raptor, and now it's a lizard beast.
Jurassic
which is like
Park.
The weakest way for someone to call something a dinosaur. It's a lizard beast. No, it's a dinosaur, dude.
Yeah. I mean, you know raptors are like the smartest dinosaurs, right? They're really smart.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard that they're smart?
Yeah.
I heard they were smart.
I heard they're really smart.
Yeah.
But that was more demonstrated.
Every
their
Jurassic
ability
Park movie is this them telling me how smart raptors
really
are
smart
for
raptors,
2 hours.
Yeah. And then you see them be really smart, and you're like, oh, man.
They opened a door.
Dang. They were able to sniff us out, but not get the main characters in time.
Okay. What's the name?
Don't steal their eggs.
Gishoth.
Gishoth, Sun's Avatar.
Gishoth seems actually pretty sweet, and I'm not much of a Timmy, but that seems like a real card. Cheat stuff directly into play. Also, you could
call
play...
me a Timmy?
Huh?
Calling me a Timmy over here?
I'm just saying, like, there's nothing wrong with being a Timmy. I'm just not a guy that likes big creatures generally, you know, I'm just saying. It's too bad that you don't have black or blue because you could play the conspiracy type effects.
I'm so sorry. You don't have all 5 colors.
That's
you can
true.
Play conspiracy, yeah, for sure, and then turn everything into it.
Yeah,
there's a new
but
card.
Shapeshifters and stuff.
Yeah, there's a new card. That I think we're going to talk about as well. That
yeah,
that does
that.
That
a conspiracy thing.
Yeah,
we'll talk about it later.
Cheaper
we're
price.
Like noticeably different because we've been doing so much podcasting today. Okay, yeah.
We have one more video after this too. Hooray!
We can do it. We can make it. All right, the last legendary creature in the set is Tishana, Voice of Thunder. That must be hard to talk to Tishana. It's like, Tishana, how are you doing?
We've lost it.
Okay.
All right.
I got this. Tishana, Voice of Thunder, 5 green blue for a star. Merfolk Shaman, legendary creature. Of course, Tishana's power and toughness are equal or sorry, are each equal to the number of cards in your hand. So if you have seven cards, she's a 7/7.
Cool.
Or he, I'm not sure. You have no maximum hand size. Wait, I got to read the last part.
I need to figure out if this voice of Leonard is a male or a female. I think it's a he.
You have no maximum hand size?
No, it's a female. It's a female. Tashana is not a male name, I don't think.
I don't have no idea.
I don't know.
You have no maximum hand size.
It's
and
a she.
When Tashana enters the battlefield, you draw a card for each creature you control.
How much does it cost?
5 green blue.
Oh, jeez.
Cuss, it's
prime, well, I mean,
it's
like,
Prime Speaker Zagana-ish, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's also, what's the card that draws for each green creature you control?
Regal Force?
Yeah, Regal Force. So yeah. It's similar to that in terms of how much it costs. But it's power and toughness equal to number of cards in your hand. You have no maximum hand size. When there's the battlefield, you draw a card for each creature you control. So, I mean, it's all
ETB
on
too,
the...
so you could blink it.
Yeah, it's all on the card, which is nice.
Yeah, that's true. It all works with itself, right? There's no, like, weird... doesn't get along with each other text.
Minimum, this is a 7-mana reliquary tower that draws you one card.
That's bad, though.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Minimum is bad. I mean, it's a 7-drop, but the effect you actually don't want until a little bit later, because you don't really want to play a card that's going to draw you a card for each creature you control on turn 3.
Right.
So
I feel like this is just a really nice thing to have as the top end in a deck that's just a green-blue deck otherwise.
A green-blue token deck.
Yeah, but I feel
and
like
this
there's...
can just, it's a token deck, and this just is free card draw when you need it.
When you need it, yeah.
So you can just go heavy ramp token, and you know you have to always have access to Tashana.
Yeah, so you can just keep the fuel going.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting card. I don't know if I want to ever run this as commander, given your other choices in green and blue.
Yeah, green blue is just the best color.
It's just
combination.
Like, right, you're not gonna run into problems drawing cards in green and blue.
Yeah,
or that's making
a good point.
Yeah.
But yeah.
If there's like a make sure creatures +1/+1, I could consider it a little more. But otherwise this just has there are other cards that do this and you can still have a better commander. So it's a Merfolk Shaman. Maybe there's a Merfolk deck to go with it. Maybe you can just do a flavor deck, but I don't think this is great.
It's really Prime Speaker Zagana, whereas Prime Speaker wants you to have one big creature, Tashani wants you to have a lot of creatures, right? It's
really this one card, except this main difference between the two.
No, but I'm just saying, like, that.
And what it does, yeah.
Like, there's two strategies with creatures, right? Go big, go wide.
Yeah.
Prime Speaker's the go big one, and Tashana's the go wide one now.
Yeah.
So maybe.
But Prime Speaker's
just a decent deck, though.
I think Prime Speaker's just better.
Probably.
You could play Vorl of the Whole.
Probably. But you're not playing a token deck, right?
Yeah.
So if you
true.
Wanted to play tokens, but you wanted the Prime Speaker.
All right.
I think Gashath is kind of the best one. It's a pretty good one.
Yeah, but Gashath definitely is the one. I mean,
it really depends on how good the dinosaurs are and how many they errata.
Yeah.
Because if they don't errata a lot or they don't errata the good ones, then Gashath gets a lot worse.
Hey, we're in great position, though. We're 24 minutes in this podcast and we've talked about 4 cards.
Okay. All right. And there are 3 more legendary creatures, actually. They're monocolored. And full disclosure, you may have noticed that our audio quality has changed a little here. When we were recording this originally, we kind of accidentally skipped over these cards. If they weren't legendary creatures, we probably would just let it slide. But since they are, we felt the need to record what we call a pickup to talk about these cards. Because Jimmy and I are now in separate states.
Forever.
Forever ever? Don't scare me, man.
All right, let's get talking about these legendary creatures.
Okay, so the first one is a white card. It's Mavren Fane, Dusk Apostle. It's 2 and a white for a 2/2 legendary creature, Vampire Cleric. It says whenever one or more non-token vampires you control attack, create a 1/1 white vampire creature token with lifelink.
Nice. So these are pretty standard vampire tokens. Mavren is, however, mono white, so I don't see him again as a creature that you would necessarily want to be your commander. Mono white already has enough trouble as is, so I don't think limiting yourself to also having vampire creatures is going to do you much good.
Yeah, I mean, white's not traditionally one of the big vampire colors either. That's usually black and or red, so it seems like having Mavren Fane as like your front man or your lead singer is not going to work out, at least presently. Maybe in the future when there's more vampires in white, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise just put him in Edgar Markov and laugh all the way to the vampire bank.
I mean, one thing is, I think he's fine, but he's still not amazing, because it's not like you get a vampire token for every one of your vampires that attack, right? You just get a vampire token when one or more of your non-token vampires attack.
That's a good point.
It's fine, but like one vampire token per turn if you're attacking, I don't know, for a 3-mana 2/2. I don't know. I'm just not high on it.
You can almost always do better.
Yeah, I think so.
If you did have Edgar out, though, you could stack the triggers in a way that the +1/+1 counter would go on the vampire token.
Yeah, that's true. I think it probably does go in Edgar. I just don't think it's like amazing.
Yeah. It's slow value over a long time. But the big thing is like it requires attacking, so you're going to be in a deck that is attacking. So that's why Edgar is probably the best fit for a card like this.
Yeah, that's true. And Edgar has haste. So yeah. Casting Edgar and just attacking with Maverin Fane out will, you know, net you a vampire token. So, All right, on to the next one. The next one is Mono Blue. It's Coppola, Warden of Waves. It's one blue-blue for a 2/2. It's a legendary creature, Merfolk Wizard. Spells your opponent's cast that target a Merfolk you control cost 2 generic mana more to cast, or abilities your opponents activate that target a Merfolk you control cost 2 more generic mana to activate. Well, first of all,
this
Coppola.
Sounds,
I mean,
like, yeah,
we,
Francis
is this
Ford
the Godfather?
Coppola. It could be Coppola.
Yeah, it probably is, but I'm going to call it Coppola because it's the godfather of waves.
I mean, this seems like it's going to be great for the Merfolk deck, right? Is that kind of like maybe run it as like a 2-of or something?
Yeah, in modern, you mean?
Yeah, modern. Or I mean, all the way back to vintage, who knows? I don't know. If you're building a Merfolk deck and you really have high value Merfolk, then this could be useful. But again, it's a monocolored commander. You're going to run into restrictions as is. I don't know if you're going to want this again as your lead singer.
Yeah, and again, our big worry in EDH is often not single target removal. I mean, this is nice to have. I just don't think it's so powerful you're like, oh, I have to run that as my general. It seems fine, but I think it goes in the Merfolk deck.
Mm-hmm.
It also, you know, they sort of, for this set, they've sort of expanded Merfolk to be blue and green.
Right.
So it seems like you're going to want, if anything, you're going to want to expand into green also. But obviously blue is at least the main color for Merfolk, whereas Maverin Fane is white, and that's not the main color for vampires. So I think this deck as a, you know, sort of the lead singer of a Merfolk deck is, you know, better than Maverin Fane at least.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if we're comparing only these monocolor legendaries so far, Francis Ford Coppola is up top.
The godfather of waves.
Nice.
You think they were mad because Master of Waves was already a card, so they have to call this one the Warden of Waves?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, there are a lot of things you could be towards the waves, and if there is one Master, although if you look at that card, that is truly the Master of Waves.
It's actually kind of similar to the art on this card, honestly.
Yeah, that's true. They're always bursting forth being like, I am a part of the ocean. But I think Master of Waves is also just a better card than everything we've talked about so far.
Yeah, for sure. It's too bad it's not legendary.
Yeah.
Or it's good it's not legendary,
yeah,
depending
it's
on your
good,
perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And there's one more. It is the mono red legendary creature. It's two. Oh, sorry. The name is Captain Lannery Storm, which would make you think that it's a storm mechanic commander, but it's not. It's two and a red for a 2/2 legendary creature. Human pirate has haste. Whenever Captain Lannery Storm attacks, create a colorless treasure artifact token with. You can tap and sacrifice this artifact, add one mana of any color to your mana pool. And then whenever you sacrifice a treasure, Captain Lannery Storm gets +1/+0 until end of turn.
This looks like it's a nice, again, inclusion into a mono red deck. It's like another form of ramp. But it's, you know, in the same way that like you can play a 3-mana rock and you can use it once to tap for some mana.
Yeah.
You can now attack with a creature and then get something you can tap for mana.
I mean, I wish it was more like Maverin Fane, where like if a creature you control, if one or more creatures you control
right.
attacks, then you get one. But Captain Lannery Storm actually has to be the one attacking, and she is a 2/2.
Yeah,
that's gonna make it tough after like you know a certain time. You know, you'll probably get an attack or two in because of the haste. But also, man, this really makes me think: why didn't they just call the treasure gold? Because that would be more. Things that sort of interact with Captain Lannery Storm, because whenever you sacrifice a
right.
treasure, it's only going to really work for, you know, Ixalan and Rivals of Ixalan, whereas if it said gold also, it would interact with some other cards in Magic's past.
Yeah.
I think that's an opportunity missed. I mean,
I'm sure they have some weird reason for it in that the gold originally was like more from King Makar and stuff, and it's I don't know it's land gold, not ocean gold. I don't know. Who knows?
I think they wanted to be able to say the phrase like you're searching for buried treasure, and
right.
searching for buried gold just doesn't have the same ring to it. So they just sacrifice. Maybe they'll go back and they'll errata the gold to be called treasure. I mean, they're doing it with dinosaurs. Why couldn't they do that?
Yeah,
they won't do that. They probably won't do that because
yeah.
they don't like to do that much. But
also, King Makar the Curse does not create treasure. He creates gold.
That's a good point.
The only upside I can see of this card is there are a lot of artifact decks that are always looking to place an artifact on the battlefield in some way so that they can sack it to regenerate something else out of the graveyard.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I'd rather just play like a clue generator. But the fact that this does add mana may make it better than something like a clue. I don't know.
My initial instinct is that this just won't be good enough for most EDH decks or playgroups.
Yeah.
In most circumstances, even for mono red, but you never know.
Hey, but if you are doing a pirate based theme, it is kind of cool. So there is always that in terms of tribal synergies and all that.
That's a good point. If you're doing an Arr Mighty deck, then good on you.
Good on you. That's not what pirates say to each other. They say, Yar, ahoy there.
How does a pirate say good on you?
Avast ye cool dude. I don't know. I'd have to look it up.
Avast ye cool dude. All right. Well, I'll let everybody else out there look up how pirates say good on you. And well, we'll cut back now to our normal podcast recording, and our audio will go back to being the way it was before, I guess.
Yeah, but maybe you won't be able to tell at all. Who knows?
I mean, we told them, so they probably know now.
No, maybe they forgot.
No, they probably, you know, some people fall asleep during the cast, so when wake up, it'll be as if nothing happened.
Yeah, and they'll miss, they will have missed three cards that are of not any particular significance either.
Hey, but we like to be thorough.
Very true.
All right, see you on the other side.
All right.
Okay. All right, let's move on to the new Planeswalkers. This one is Hot Jace, is what I'm calling him now. Jace Cunning Castaway. One blue for a three loyalty Planeswalker. Legendary Planeswalker Jace. We'll notice the new rule is now in session, where you can see it says Legendary Planeswalker in front of it. His plus one, whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player this turn, draw a card, then discard a card. So you get a loot on a plus one if you... when your creatures deal combat damage this turn. It needs to be before your combat phase, most likely. Minus two, create a 2/2 blue illusion creature token with when this creature becomes the target of a spell, sacrifice it. Minus two. Minus five, very interesting. Create two tokens that are copies of Jace, Cunning Castaway, except they are not legendary. So he essentially creates two illusions of himself for five loyalty. And
those illusions can create two more illusions.
Two more illusions, yeah. So that is, I think, the best part of this card is getting it to ultimate. Because the plus one is really not that great to just be able to loot when a creature does combat damage to a player. Like, you could just play a looter at that case.
And looting's good, but it's not that good. Like, yeah. you're not up a card.
And then his minus two just creates a 2/2 that's really vulnerable to targeted spells.
Well,
that's not going to happen.
Most spells are going to kill it anyway,
yeah.
So that's,
and that's
not going to
happen. It also won't happen in EDH very often. I don't know. This
the
Jace
big thing is that this Jace goes infinite with Doubling Season.
Yes.
So you create it comes in, has six loyalty. You use the ultimate. It actually, instead of making two copies of Jace, it makes four. And
those
four
come in
with
six,
and
yeah,
they each make four more. So now you've got, 16? You do that enough times, and now you can create infinite amount of 2/2s.
Yeah.
So, but the list of Planeswalkers that are good with Doubling Season is, like, it's getting too big to remember all those cards now. So, yeah fine, it's good with Doubling Season. So,
and the best cards in the Super Friends Doubling Season deck are the ones that work well, even if they're,
yes,
like...
You want the card to protect itself and to work well by itself. It does create a 2/2. It's not horrible.
It's just not great.
It's just not great. It's a three drop though. It comes out early.
Yeah, it comes out early. But yeah, that's about all I have to say about that card ever again. Okay. All
right. The next one is a new Planeswalker.
I thought
we
Jace
haven't
would have
seen
bigger
before.
Biceps though.
Just Jace saying. Needs to work out. He should use his illusions to make himself look buff.
Oh my gosh. he should have made the illusion tokens just really ripped.
He's like, hey, he's like, I'm making an illusion of myself.
Yeah, may as well go all the way.
It's gonna look like Cassius Marsh. All right. He's got some sleeves or some tattoos.
Yeah, those are like I don't know, veins of mana.
Of mana?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know, man. I'm not good at this thing.
Okay, I'm not good at this thing.
I'm tired now.
Okay. The next Planeswalker is a new one. It's Huatli.
Huatli.
Huatli, Warrior Poet. Three, a red and a white.
Boros.
So five mana for a three loyalty Planeswalker. So you can plus two Huatli and gain life equal to the greatest power among creatures you control.
Okay,
sure. Oh, you can zero ability and create a 3/3 dinosaur creature token with trample. Wow.
Sounds better than Jace's minus two.
Wow.
Just saying.
It's a zero?
That's pretty sweet, right?
That's pretty sweet. And then Quetli has a weird, it's not even an ultimate, but it's in the ultimate slot. It's a negative X.
Mm-hmm.
And you, Quetli deals X damage divided as you choose among any number of target creatures. Creatures dealt damage this way can't block this turn. So now we know why she doesn't come in with a lot of loyalty, because she would kind of be able to gun down a lot of stuff.
Yep.
Which
you go ping, 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 stop three things and blocking for five mana.
Really, you just play her and make dinosaurs. Five mana, though, is that good enough for EDH? With doubling season, it's not that great. Of course, we always have to now analyze based on how good they are with doubling season.
Who knows? I mean, it's
gaining
not...
life is pretty bad.
Yeah. I mean, being able to make dinosaurs is what it's all about. I'll probably play this in my Dino Tribal decks just to make more dinosaurs.
Yeah. It's okay.
It's okay.
It's like a C minus.
Our last Planeswalker, probably the best of the bunch, is Vraska, Relic Seeker. And man, Vraska looks so cool as a pirate. I love it. For a black and a green for a 6 loyalty Planeswalker. That's what I'm talking about. Plus 2, create a 2/2 black pirate creature token with menace. Jace, are you paying attention?
That's the plus?
Are you paying attention, Jace?
Oh, man.
This is how you do it.
That's plus 2?
So she goes up to 8.
Oh, that's... Oof.
Minus 3, a very Vraska ability. Destroy target artifact, creature, or enchantment. Create a colorless treasure artifact token with sack this artifact. Add 1 mana of any match your mana pool. So you can minus 3 here to blow up a really problematic artifact, creature, or enchantment. That's really flexible.
That's really good.
And then you get 1 mana back.
Yeah, you just get 1 mana. It's not even, I guess it's back, kind of.
Well, 1 at any time you want. Yeah. And then her minus 10.
Minus 10. Well, so that's actually not bad.
Not bad. To go up to 2. Yeah. So you could have her for out for 3 turns and then do this, or chain veil it, or doubling season. Target player's life total becomes 1. That's actually kind of cool.
Oh, that's brutal.
Because I play the other Sorin in my Planeswalker deck to take the 10. Yeah. So this does it to
1.
Yeah, that person is not looking good.
And then for style points, you have a Tim out. You Tim him. Bing.
Bing.
All right.
Bing.
I think Vraska is pretty decent. And she's in the doubly season colors. And all 3 of her abilities are good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's pretty good.
All right, now this is very exciting. This is kind of a new mechanic that we didn't talk about, but there are flip cards in the set.
Dual-faced.
Yeah, and the backs of the cards are like, it's really neat, actually. I love the design that they have on the back. It's a nice mix, I think, of what people want in sort of like an alternate art, full art-esque thing that's kind of like borderless in a way.
You know what? Terry can show them better than we are, actually. So there's 10 dual-faced cards. There's 5 colorless and 5 colored. They all flip over to become lands. So everything flips into a land. So the first 5 are 5.
You don't hear that very often, by the way.
Yeah. The first 5 are 5 artifacts that flip over to become lands. So we'll just go through them. The first one is Treasure Map. It's 2 mana for an artifact. You can pay 1, tap it to scry 1, and then you put a landmark counter on the treasure map. Then if there are 3 or more landmark counters on it, you remove those counters and you transform the treasure map. And when you do that, you create 3 treasure tokens. Again, you can sacrifice the treasure.
Already, by the way, this card's good, I think, by itself. You get a scry, and then at 3, you get 3 mana back.
But it's 5 mana to do it, and then you get 3 mana back, and you scry 3 times.
The whole point is that
I think it's close.
You got to get this out early, but I think I would play this in a red-white deck immediately, especially what's on the back.
Yeah, in red-white, it's good, because, again, it flips over and becomes a land, and that won't count for your land per turn when you play it.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you scry 3 times, you put 3 counters on this, and then you're going to flip it, and you're going to get 3 treasure tokens. So you get the 3 treasure, you flip it over, and it's Treasure Cove, which is a land that taps for a diamond or colorless mana. You can also tap the Treasure Cove and sacrifice a treasure and draw a card. So you have 3 treasures sitting there. You can turn those into cards if you want to, or you can just sack them for mana.
That's why I like that part, too.
I think it's good in Boros. Maybe it's good in Boros. It's good in mono white. Might even be good in mono red.
Very few decks are going to want to purposely remove Treasure Map, I think. These are the nice thing about these hidden powers is that you're not being like, I need to kill this card immediately. No, this card, it just gains you a little bit of value over time. And then you get mana or cards. All right, the next flip card is Thematic Compass. Also, by the way, I might note that when it becomes a land, it's because it's really hard to remove comparatively. Thematic Compass is a 2-drop artifact. You can pay 3 and tap it. Search your library for a basic land card, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. So that's kind of expensive. However, at the beginning of your end step, if you control 7 or more lands, transform Thematic Compass.
Now, those two abilities aren't tied.
Yeah.
So at any time, if you have 7 lands, you can transform it. So you don't even ever have to use the ability. You just have to get to 7 lands, and then it'll flip.
Yep. And this turns into Spires of Orozca, which is tapping. You can tap it for a colorless mana, or you can tap it to untap target attacking creature and opponent controls and remove it from combat. It's Maze of Ith.
Yep.
This is how Wizards is doing functional reprints of cards, by the way, is by putting them on sweet stuff like this, like the sort of value cards. And the really interesting part about it is that Maze of Ith doesn't tap for mana, but this card does. So for two mana, I mean, you're not really going to want to... I would want to, I think, ideally have this in the deck where you play this when you have seven lands out in play.
Yeah, I mean, what you could do is you play it on two because you don't have a lot of two drops in the deck. And then if you ever just happen to have three mana laying around, you activate it. But
or
otherwise,
if you have
just,
to hit, you know...
Yeah, but otherwise you just wait till you have seven lands and it flips and now you got a Maze of Ith that taps for mana.
It's like an automatic ramp card on that turn that you are able to flip it.
That's true. It ramps you from seven to eight, basically.
Because you can flip it immediately and also tap it for mana that turn.
True, but it flips when?
Oh, instep.
Yeah. I mean, you could if you had flash stuff or whatever, but still. Maze of Ith generally, you're going to want to hold open anyway.
Yeah.
I think that card's pretty good. And again, it's colorless, so it goes in any deck.
Yes.
And it's only a two drop, so it doesn't cost you much to play, right?
Investors, these are the cards you're going to want to look at. 100%.
Probably, yeah. The next one is Primal Amulet. It's four mana for an artifact. Instant and sorcery spells you cast cost one less to cast.
Okay.
Already playable in a lot of decks.
Yep.
Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, put a charge counter on Primal Amulet. Then, if there are four or more charge counters on it, you may remove those counters and transform it. So this one, you do have to cast it an instant or sorcery, and then it will check, and then it will flip, right? I guess... just if you had something else that put charge counters on things,
yeah,
you couldn't just flip it unless you cast at least one instant or sorcery.
Sure.
You're only going to play in an instant or sorcery deck. okay, it turns into Primal Wellspring, which is a land. This is really good. Tap and add one mana of any color to your mana pool. When that mana is spent to cast an instant or sorcery spell, copy that spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. So it becomes Pyromancer's Goggles, except for it'll copy any spell.
Yeah.
Any instant or sorcery. Also, you can use that mana for not an instant or sorcery. It just won't copy it. But you start forking everything you play. Ah, that card's really good.
This goes in Mizzix and makes it even better.
Goes in Mizzix and Melek and Kess and all these spell
oh
decks.
Oh my gosh. Could you imagine like having a huge stack and then casting a counterspell and having it doubled up because of this Primal Amulet or something?
It's really good. I think it might be good enough even in not instant and sorcery like... 100% theme decks, even if you
just
have 20
have
or so.
Yeah. Being able to double a spell at very little cost to yourself, because if you think about it, if you save four mana over the course of playing this card, then you will have quote-unquote paid for it, which you need to do to get four counters on it in the first place.
What if you have, like, a Cures, Followers, and Fate Stitchers?
Oh, wow. And you untap,
and you
tap.
Untap it, tap it, tap it, so you create, like, five copies of a spell when you cast it.
Whenever,
will that work?
When that mana is meant to cast... Yeah, wait.
I think it would trigger each time you tapped it. I have no clue.
I have no
clue.
We're
in the realm that gets us
in
trouble
here.
But
if it does, then that is insane.
Otherwise, you just cast a different instant or sorcery the second time.
Yeah, exactly.
It seems really good.
All right, our next flip card is Dousing Dagger. It's two mana for an artifact equipment, the first equipment of the group. When Dousing Dagger enters the battlefield, target opponent creates 2/0/2 green plant creature tokens with Defender.
Target opponent.
Opponent, so you give this to someone. Equipped creature gets +2/+1. Whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, you may transform Dousing Dagger. So the whole point is like, oh, you can't easily attack into the person in a 1v1 game because you just gave them two blockers. The equip cost is 2, but in a multiplayer game, you can probably attack a lot of people. And it turns into, what's that card called? Gilded Lotus. Tap, add 3 mana of any one color to your mana pool. This is a powerful card.
Another card that if you have untap, you know, permanent type effects.
Yeah.
Also, red and white, which are colors that want to attack people and have trouble ramping. Boom.
Boom. Dousing Dagger. Boom. Every single one of these cards are playable so far, and I think they're all really good in different ways.
Yeah. And the last of the colorless flip cards is Conqueror's Galleon.
Vehicles are back, by the way, too.
Oh, yeah.
We should
vehicles
have
are back. Oh, yeah. We didn't mention that as a mechanic.
Now we did.
Vehicles are back. All right. Conqueror's Galleon. 4 mana for an artifact vehicle. It's a 2/10, but it has crew 4, so it only becomes that 2/10 if you tap a number of creatures you control with total power 4 or more, and then it's a creature until end of turn. It says, when Conqueror's Galleon attacks, exile it at the end of combat, then return it to the battlefield transformed under your control. So it'll still deal combat damage because it doesn't exile until the end of combat.
It also gives them a chance to block
it. It has to live, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got 10 toughness. They're probably not going to block and kill it, but at the same time, If it died to something in combat, then it,
not necessarily
it won't
a free
reach
attack.
The end of combat, yeah. But if it lives at the end of combat, you're going to flip it over, and it's going to become Conqueror's Foothold, which has sweet art, and it's a land.
This card is also nuts.
This is the Staff of Domination of Lands. It has it has four abilities. One, it taps for diamond or colorless mana, or you can pay two and tap it to draw a card, then discard a card so you can loot. Or you can pay four and tap it to just straight up draw a card. Or you can pay six and tap it to return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand.
No, just target card.
Oh, to return target card from your graveyard to your... Oh, man, this card's really good.
Yeah, it's like the... it's the Staff of Domination slash Trading Post slash...
Land of Domination.
Land of Domination.
The only thing I'll say is that you need to be able to crew it.
Yeah, and that leaves you open.
So it can't go... And it also can't go in decks that don't have a high enough creature count. Now, mm-hmm. you don't have to super high, but it's still four. So, you know, some decks, a lot of my decks wouldn't want it. But at the same time, man, it's really good when it flips over.
Yeah.
Land of Domination.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
All right. Well, if you thought that was good, there's some other crazy stuff here. Not all of these are as good, I think.
No,
but
they're
one
all
of them is
still
really
good.
Crazy.
Yeah. So now we are into the enchantments that flip into
legendary enchantments.
Into lands. Yeah. So the exploring theme is heavy here, if you're thinking about it. You're using artifacts to explore, enchantments to explore. These are all legendary enchantments. The first one is Legion's Landing. It costs one white. When Legion's Landing enters the battlefield, create a 1/1 white vampire creature token with lifelink. And then when you attack with three or more creatures, transform Legion's Landing. And it transforms into a land that taps for white mana. And also two and a white tap, create a 1/1 white vampire creature token with lifelink. So good in the token deck, obviously. You get a 1/1 out of it no matter what. And then you just need to attack with three or more creatures to transform it. You don't need to deal damage or any of that stuff.
Yeah, as soon as you attack with three creatures, boom, it flips over. And now it's a sort of token creator. It's not a very efficient one. It's cost three mana.
Yeah.
It really costs four because you're tapping one of your lands.
Oh, right. Sorry. This is called Odonto, the first four when it transforms. I don't think I said that.
It's a legendary land. Hey, Captain Sisse can go find this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
She always could, though, because it's not like they were planeswalkers that suddenly have legendary that didn't before. Anyway, okay. The next one is the blue one. Search for Azcanta.
Searching.
Azcanta. Is that supposed to be like Aztec?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. One in a blue for a legendary enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, look at the top card of your library. You may put it into your graveyard. Then, if you have seven or more cards in your graveyard, you may transform Search for Azcanta. That's kind of like a Kid Jace a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It turns into Azcanta, the Sunken Ruin.
You found it.
It's a legendary land. Taps for blue mana. Or you can pay two and tap it to... Sorry, two and a blue and tap it to look at the top four cards of your library. You may reveal a non-creature, non-land card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in your order. So it's card selection for non-creature, non-land cards. For two and a blue and mm-hmm. tap this. It's not super efficient, but man, it's pretty good because you look at four cards and you pick one.
Yeah,
if you have a lot of
search through your deck.
Yeah, if you have a lot of non-creatures in your deck, I think it's probably pretty good. I mean, obviously you gotta be in blue.
All right, let's talk about the worst one. Argel's Bloodfast, one in the black for a legendary enchantment. One in the black, pay two life, draw a card. So that's just not good.
It's greed, but worse. It's Erebus. It's what Erebus has.
Yeah,
on.
Exactly.
Except for Erebus has other things that he does.
And then it says, at the beginning of your upkeep, if you have five or less life, you may transform Argel's Bloodfast.
Okay.
At the beginning of your upkeep, and you have to have five or less life, it's just not good.
At the beginning of your upkeep, if you have five or less life, newsflash, you're in trouble.
You're in trouble, yeah. The other side is the Temple of Akhrazots, and you can tap it to add black to your mana pool, and you can tap it to sacrifice a creature. You gain life equal to the sacrificed creature's toughness. So
wait, this is what's the card? There's High Market, but that just gives you one. But is it like Miri's Well or something?
Oh, yeah. I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah, so this is interesting. You get it equal to the toughness. Let's look it up right now. But it, in general, one, you never want to have this thing triggered.
You don't want to be at five life. Generally, there might be, like, your Marchesa deck might put itself down there.
Yeah, but at that point, this is not going to save my butt, you know?
I mean, you have to have, like, a 20-20 to get yourself.
Yeah, I don't know. I might play this in the Marchesa deck, but Animal Boneyard can enchant a land to do it. And you also, Aileen does the same thing. And so does Diamond Valley.
Oh, Diamond Valley.
Yeah, Diamond Valley.
There's another one. There's like a well. Mirin the Moaning Well.
Yeah, but that costs three mana to do it. So there are a lot of effects that do this in having a sack outlet on the land.
Diamond Valley are expensive, though. Cards.
Yes, they are. So. But at the same time, you're just not going to. Yeah, I don't want to ever get below 5 life to so I can start sacking creatures to gain life.
Yeah, yeah, you're not going to do that.
No, thanks.
All right, the next one is the red one. It's Vance's Blasting Cannons. It's 3 and a red for a legendary enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top card of your library. If it's a non-land card, you may cast that card this turn. Oh, so that is Outpost Siege, which is, what does he call it? What does Mauro call it? Impulsive Draw?
Impulsive Drawing, yeah.
Well, that card's just playable, period.
Yeah.
I almost don't want to flip it now. Whenever you cast your third spell in a turn, you may transform Vance's... Well, you don't have to flip it if you don't want to then, I guess. if you place 3 spells in a turn, you flip it. It flips into Spitfire Bastion, a legendary land, taps for red mana, or you can pay 2 and a red, tap it. Spitfire Bastion deals 3 damage to target creature or player.
Now, that's actually not to be underrated just because it's a repeatable effect. Yeah. But it, again, like you said, it uses the land to do it, and so it's essentially kind of like a 4 mana spell. Just not that good.
You know what?
But the first
front
part
side's
of it,
so good in mono red or Boros.
If you want to have another Outpost Siege effect, yeah.
Yeah, and then if it happens to flip over, it's not like you're mad about it. You got a land that taps to deal damage. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, yeah, the legendary land side's not as good, but the enchantment side's better, so maybe not it bad. Evens out. Okay, the next one is Hold On To Your Butts.
Hold On To Your Butts. Growing Rites of Itlimok. It's 2 and a green for a legendary enchantment. When Growing Rites of Itlimok enters the battlefield, look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order.
So it kind of replaces itself.
Mm-hmm. And at the beginning of your end step, if you control 4 or more creatures, transform this card into Itlimok, Cradle of the Sun. Keyword, cradle. Tap to add green to your mana pool. Or tap, add green to your mana pool for each creature you control. Strictly better, Gaia's Cradle. I shouldn't throw it that hard.
Yeah, be careful. This is mine.
Strictly better Gaia's Cradle because it can tap for green by itself. But here's the thing. It's going to transform when you have 4 more creatures, so it's going to be able to tap for a ton of mana that same turn or at your end step. So yeah, either way, absurd.
It's not strictly better, obviously, but
on the other
once
side,
it flips,
is.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right, though. The fact that it transforms when you have 4 more creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Gaia's Cradle is good when you have 4 more creatures, so that's going to be the time when it flips over. I mean, obviously, yes, if you have 3 creatures, Gaia's Cradle is still good. I'm just saying, this is... The gap between how good this is and how good Gaia's Cradle is large still, but it's not as large as I would think for a freaking $250 card or whatever it is. So
yeah, exactly.
That one is super exciting, right? Because people who can't afford Gaia's Cradle, who are most players, can now get a Growing Rites of Itlimok.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Do it to it.
We're going into a white. Are we going in strictly Wooburg order? I think
No, we want white, black, red, blue, green.
Oh, sweet. All right.
Spoiler alert.
All right. So the first white card is Ashes of the Abhorrent. It's 1 and a white for an enchantment. Players can't cast spells from graveyards or activate abilities of cards in graveyards.
Hmm.
When a creature dies, you gain 1 life.
This is just anti-dredge. I think it's more printed for modern and stuff.
But I think it's pretty good in our format. It's not strict graveyard hate in that it doesn't exile stuff, so there's still shenanigans that can occur because not all shenanigans from graveyards are casting spells from them or activating abilities, but still... It's a low cost point to put it into your deck.
Yeah. I'd rather just play the card that exiles all cards from graveyards, though. You know what I mean?
I don't know, because this is ongoing, right?
Yeah, that's true. All right. Next up, we have Axis of Mortality. It was our preview card for Ixalan. 4 white-white enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may have 2 target players exchange life totals. We discussed this in depth. If you want to check out our last episode when we talked about Ramos Dragon Engine, you'll find the discussion there, and it'll be more coherent than the discussion we're having right now.
I mean, TLDR is that... It might be a little bit fun, but it's not that good.
It's cheeky.
I like it. The next card is Ixalan's Binding. This is 3 and a white for an enchantment. When Ixalan's Binding enters the battlefield, exile target non-land permanent and opponent controls until Ixalan's Binding leaves the battlefield. Your opponents can't cast spells with the same name as the exiled card.
It's made for Commander.
So one thing to clarify here, which is why I wanted to bring it up, it won't really work against the commander because I'm going to play it on, let's say Jimmy's got Animar out, and I play it targeting Animar.
Except
it would go into exile. Except, oh, yeah, it's white. It's not. I pick the one freaking... Okay, Jimmy's playing Marchesa.
You can't.
And he doesn't have a sac outlet out.
You can't. I counterspelled it.
Jimmy's tapped out and has no cards at hand.
And he's on his phone.
And I play Ixalan's Binding targeting... Marchesa, which is going to exile it, but he chooses to put it into the command zone.
Right.
So now Ixalan's Binding doesn't see that card is exiled because your opponents can't cast spells with the same name as the exiled card.
Yeah.
There's no exiled card, so it won't stop him from casting Marchesa in the future. So it won't work in that way. I just wanted to clarify that. It just is so pretty good against commonly played cards in Commander, though, because it says your opponents can't cast spells with the same name.
Oh, right.
So if you Soul Ring, nobody can cast a Soul Ring except for you. If you get a Sensei's Divining Top, which is very hard to get, that wasn't a good example.
If you get an Animar, I'm just kidding.
If you get a Videlkin Orrery or one of those cards that a lot of people tend to play, then you might stop other people from playing it.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I didn't even think of that.
It's okay.
All right, next up we have Settle the Wreckage. 2WW for an instant. You're calling this...
Wrath to Exile.
I love it. Exile all attacking creatures target player controls. That player may search his or her library for that many basic land cards, put those cards onto the battlefield tapped, and shuffle his or her library. So you're basically getting rid of all the people and resetting that landscape below them. But in EDH, how many... I mean, if I did this against your five-color decks, you would just cry because you have no basic lands in there.
Most of my decks, three-color decks, there's not probably going to be enough basic lands.
The problem, though, is that most of the decks that are attacking with a ton of creatures, like token decks, are usually two-color, so they'll be able to ramp it out. But this is still really good for 2WW in an instant to just exile every attacking creature target player. It doesn't even be attacking you. You could be attacking anyone.
I think it's okay. I mean, think of it this way, though. Would you rather run Ghostly Prison?
Mm-hmm.
Almost certainly, right? Because it's going to stop the attacks from everybody. Yeah. So that's a tough one.
It's a one-time use thing. You could use it on yourself if you're crazy.
Now, that's a thing that a lot of people have been bringing up about this card, and frankly, I think is way overrated. Like, yes, I get it. You can use this on yourself to get basic lands out of your deck. That feels like a thing that is going to be talked about and no one's going to ever actually do.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I get it. Yes, if you make like 8 or 9 tokens. But if you have 8 or 9 tokens on the battlefield, that's what your deck wants to do. You don't want to turn those into lands.
Yeah.
You know, you want to get land so that you can make 8 or 9 tokens once you're already there. And then, if you could do it in response to a board wipe and turn those into lands, you would love to, but you rarely are doing that during combat, so Settle the Wreckage doesn't help you. Just tone down the rhetoric on the cast it on yourself thing. I think it's going to be like the curses where nobody actually does that.
Yeah. All right. The last white card is Tokatli Honor Guard. It's 1W for a creature, human, soldier, 1/3. Creatures entering the battlefield don't cause abilities to trigger. This is just an annoying card to play.
Hushwing Torpor Griff Orb.
Hushwing Torgriff. Torbjorn.
Torbjorn. That was my favorite character for a long time because I'm bad at FPS. So, you know, I can't aim. Let that turret aim.
Yeah. Anyway, that does it for white. Obviously, Tokatli Honor Guard is just one of those cards that you should play if you want to do those hate berry
decks. Then go for it.
I mean, it really is one of the most annoying cards to play against.
It wrecks so many of my decks.
Yeah.
Okay. We're into black. The first one is Dire Fleet Ravager. 3BB for a Orc Pirate Wizard. It's a 4/4. Has menace and death touch. But it says when Dire Fleet Ravager enters the battlefield, each player loses 1/3 of his or her life rounded up.
Each player, including yourself.
So that'd be 14 damage or loss of life, 14 to everybody when you're played if everybody's at their starting life total.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah, you'd want to position this, obviously, where you are at a higher life total than everyone else when it's resolved. And sometimes this might just put someone down to like 2, you know, or something.
True.
Crazy.
They'd have to be at 6. Or no, they'd have to be at 3.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
if you had like wound reflection.
Yeah, there you go.
Then and stuff like that, then all of a sudden, boom.
It's a fast way to end the game because it's every player, which is kind of cool. But it's 1/3, which is a random, because like Heartless Hit at 2 goes 1 player, but it's a half. Right?
Maybe you could like blink it. I don't know.
Just blink it a bunch?
It's interesting. It'll never kill them.
And do like a Pestilence-esque effect?
Well, once everybody's at 1, it'll kill them, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Pestilence, I like that.
There you go. Raider's Wake. 3BB for an enchantment. Whenever an opponent discards a card, that player loses 2 life. And here's an instance of the ongoing raid. It says raid at the beginning of your end step. If you attacked with a creature this turn, target opponent discards a card. So it rewards you whenever they discard a card. They lose 2 life and also rewards you for attacking at those people.
Yeah, and the...
And it's a target opponent. It could be anyone.
Yeah, and discarding a card and losing 2 life doesn't have to be tied to the raid part. So if you play another card like Wheel of Fortune that makes them discard, then they're going to lose the life.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, only when you sort of trigger that raid. So
yeah.
The next card is Revel in Riches. This is 4BB for an enchantment. Whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, create a colorless treasure artifact token that's like gold. You can sack it for mana. And then it says, at the beginning of your upkeep, if you control 10 or more treasures, you win the game.
There you go. Build a treasure deck.
You don't even need... You could just board wipe and maybe win, right?
Yeah, that's actually a really good point.
Like, if there's 10 creatures on the battlefield and you board wipe,
yeah.
If Revel and Riches is still around and the treasures are still around, I mean, yeah. if you could do that at instant speed on your end step or something, like,
yeah, there are plenty of cards that just win you the game on the spot, and that one's a little harder to get than the guy that like rewards you for having 40 more life or whatever. But
I think it's a little better in general the rest of the time, though, because you're just getting instant.
Yeah, you always
value.
The instant value is nice.
Yeah,
it's not as good as something like Black Market, which is the same mana cost, I don't think, though.
Right.
So maybe actually, I don't know. I think it's comparable because you have to use the Black Market mana immediately.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, Ruthless Knave, 2 in the black, a creature, orc, pirate, that's a 3/2. You can pay 2 in the black to sacrifice a creature and to create 2 treasure artifact tokens. And again, those sacrifice to add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. So this is just a nice sac outlet, doesn't need to tap for 2 in the black, and you get 2 treasure out of it. And it also says sacrifice 3 treasures, draw a card. So has a little bit of extra utility there.
And remember, the treasure tokens are tokens, so there may be some token decks,
mm-hmm.
You know, you have Anointed Procession, Parallel Lives, Doubling Season. All of a sudden, you're might be in this, getting some loops where you're creating extra creatures, and then when you sack them, you're creating 4 tokens, treasure tokens rather than 2, mm-hmm. which is paying to sacrifice the creature. Which you, I think this is sort of a combo-y type card that may work in some instances. All right, now we're into red. The first red card is Star of Extinction. It's 5 red, red for a sorcery. Destroy target land. Star of Extinction deals 20 damage to each creature and each planeswalker. 20 damage.
Planeswalker, actually, that's pretty cool. 7 mana. Destroy a land and then do a board wipe is kind of cool.
Yeah, kill that.
Especially for a red, like a mono red deck, I would definitely play this.
Kill that Gaea's Cradle. Kill all the planeswalkers and all the creatures.
Yeah,
seems pretty good.
Pretty much all the creatures.
There's that white creature from, I think, Fate Reforged that gives all your spells lifelink or whatever.
Oh, yeah, Monastery Mentor.
No, that makes a guy, but it's sort of like that.
It's Soulfire Grandmaster.
Yeah, Soulfire Grandmaster, then this, gain a bajillion life.
Yeah.
That seems good.
And then you also put it into your hand again to get to do it again. it requires a lot of mana, though. All right,
this card's crazy.
Sunbird's Invocation. 5 and a red for an enchantment. You know it's going to be powerful. Whenever you cast a spell from your hand, reveal the top X cards of your library, where X is that spell's converted mana cost. You may cast a card revealed this way with converted mana cost X or less without paying its mana cost. And you put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So that's actually really interesting. You know, this card is 6 mana. You're hopefully going to be casting other big spells, revealing a ton of cards, and boom, going to town.
Yeah, it does sort of a weird cascade thing, right? And you get sort of a choice of what you want to cast. Mm-hmm. This card does seem really, really good to me, sort of in the Mind's Dilation, like, mold. Not the exact same.
Yeah, and in mono red, again, you want card advantage, and this is definitely a way to spiral out of control, especially if you're doing the thing where you play that mana geyser effects.
Yeah.
You know, a ton of mana, and then Sunbird's Invocation out of control.
Yeah, that seems really good.
And it's whenever you cast a spell.
So it's like your first one, your second one, your third one. Oh, yeah, that's true. If you like string together 3 or 4 spells, you probably just win with that out.
Yep.
The next one's the card we were talking about earlier that's kind of like this card Conspiracy, which was a black card, and now this is a blue card and cheaper. 2 and a blue, enchantment as Arcane Adaptation. Sorry, that's what it's called. Arcane Adaptation. Enters the battlefield. Choose a creature type. Creatures you control are the chosen type in addition to their other types. The same is true for creature spells you control and creature cards you own that aren't on the battlefield. So all your creatures kind of become the chosen type wherever they are, kind of.
Yeah, that's actually pretty good, too.
I mean,
it's doing the effect, but now cheaper, and it's reprinted, essentially.
We might be getting to the point where, because Conspiracy was another card that existed and did this, it was only one card that had that effect. Now there's 2 cards that have that effect. You might be beginning to get to the point where you could sort of build a deck around
that idea,
counting on getting that, right?
Yeah.
It's hard when there's only one card, but when there's 2, 3, 4, now all of a sudden, I can make sure my deck, you know, gets that going.
Mm-hmm. All right, here's a Treasure Mage-esque card, Trinket Treasure Mage, but instead for different kinds of cards. Deadeye Quartermaster, 3 and a blue for a 2/2 human pirate. When Deadeye Quartermaster enters the battlefield, you may search your library for an equipment or vehicle card, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. So equipment or vehicle is the nice part about that. You get a little bit of both.
I don't think blue's been able to search for those specific things before.
No.
Well, definitely not vehicle.
Definitely not vehicle, yeah.
The next one is Spell Swindle. All right, hold on to something here. 3 blue-blue for an instant, counter target spell, then create X colorless treasure artifact tokens where X is that spell's converted mana cost.
Wow.
It's Mana Drain.
It's Mana Drain.
It's 5 mana, but it's slightly better than Mana Drain because you don't have to spend that mana on your next turn.
Yep, you get to wait.
You can just sit there and use those treasure tokens one at a time if you want to, or save it up for later.
Yeah. It's really good. This may be the best counterspell they printed in quite some time.
Yeah, I believe so. Since, like, I don't know, Pact of Negation or something?
Yeah, it's
maybe since Swan Song. Swan Song's pretty good.
Yeah.
No, Swan Song is not as good as that card. okay, now we're on to green. We only have one green card that we want to talk about in this set, and it is Shaper's Sanctuary. One green for an enchantment. Whenever a creature you control becomes the target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, you may draw a card.
All right.
It's okay.
Party time.
What's going to happen is they're not going to target your stuff when you have that out, and then they're just going to board wipe to get rid of your stuff. But, you know. All right.
That's true. It is one mana, though, so...
Yeah, cheap. Yeah, that's true.
All right, let's go into multicolored. We've got the Belligerent Brontodon. Five, a green, and a white for a 4/6 dinosaur. Each creature you control assigns combat damage equal to its toughness rather than its power. So it's a Duron for only your creatures. It is 7 mana. I don't think it's that good, but it is an effect that you don't see very often. So
yeah, and the assault formation type decks may want it.
Yeah.
The second multicolored card is Hostage Taker. 2 blue, black, 2/3 human pirate. When it enters the battlefield, exile target artifact or creature until Hostage Taker leaves the battlefield, and then you may cast that card for as long as it remains exiled, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any type to cast that spell. Here's the thing, this card's already been errated, because otherwise you could immediately force a draw by casting this card, exiling itself. It goes into exile. You cast it, it exiles itself, it goes into exile.
You just do it forever?
You can do it forever. Yeah. So it's already been errated to say exile another target creature or artifact.
Yeah, because this was part... There was a huge leak of cards earlier on, and people looked at Hostage Taker and went, wait a second, this is broken.
So we just wanted to flag that. Also, I think it's decent. If you can blink it and stuff, then you can just start casting other people's cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you do it, cast a card, then blink it. Do it, cast another card, then blink it. Yeah. All right, let's move on to artifacts. The first one is the Vanquisher's Banner, 5 mana for an artifact. Hello, Tribal. As it enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. Creatures you control of the chosen type get +1/+1. And whenever you cast a creature spell of the chosen type, draw a card.
That's going in a lot of tribal decks.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of everything in it. The +1/+1's nice, but really the drawing cards is huge.
Yeah, huge value. I was having a conversation on Twitter. This doesn't replace Coat of Arms. Coat of Arms is doing what Craterhoof Behemoth does.
Mm-hmm.
This is doing what Rhystic Study or Phyrexian Arena or things like that do. So I think, like, especially like a Boros Soldier deck, Shivam, I'm looking at you. This card's really good for card advantage. The next one's a card people are talking about a lot. It's Pillar of Origins. It's 2 mana for an artifact. When it comes to the battlefield, you choose a creature type, and then you can tap it to add mana of any color to your mana pool and spend that mana only to cast a creature spell of the chosen type. People are excited about that. I don't know. It doesn't seem that amazing to me. It's Felwar Stone.
Yeah, it's Felwar Stone.
Yeah, whatever. People are excited.
Felwar Stone-isk. Okay.
I was told this is probably the single most impactful card for competitive EDH and probably going to see some play in like Vintage and Legacy.
That makes sense. Sorceress Spyglass, 2 mana artifact. As it enters the battlefield, look at an opponent's hand and choose any card name. Activated abilities of sources with the chosen name can't be activated unless they're mana abilities. So this shuts down a card in their hand.
Planeswalkers, notably. Yeah. Other things with activated abilities.
In competitive games, having a turn 2 play like this, obviously, is very important to know their hand, as well as be able to shut down the card without necessarily discarding it. So, yeah. Interesting.
Interesting. And the last card is a land. It's called Unclaimed Territory. Sorry, the last card we're going to talk about. It's not the last card in Ixalan. As Unclaimed Territory enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. You can tap Unclaimed Territory to add diamond or colorless mana to your mana pool, or you can tap it to add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool and spend this mana only to cast a creature of the chosen type. So there, people are calling this the budget Cavern of Souls.
Mm-hmm.
It is very, very good. Because it does tap for colorless, even if you aren't playing that creature type, you can still use it.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of, you can tap for all your colors for your tribal creatures. I like this, and they've printed a couple of lands with Path to Ancestry in this.
Yeah.
They're good for tribal, but also, I think, you know, possibly playable in non-tribal decks. Because, again, you can use this to cast your commander as long as you sort of name your commander's creature type.
Creature type, yeah. This is going to be a good year for tribal decks. I'll say that much.
Yeah, it feels like it. And we know Iconic Masters is coming up, and some of the most iconic aspects of Magic are the tribes. Things like goblins, elves. I wouldn't be surprised to see stuff like that. All right. At this point, we have no knowledge of that, though.
No knowledge. We have no idea.
Okay.
Let's move on to a new segment we have, which is Best Of. So we're going to talk about the Best Of the new Legends overall card and Planeswalker. I think it's a pretty easy case for the first Legends. I think Gashath, Sun's Avatar, is definitely the most powerful of the new legendary creatures that can be your commander. It is very specifically tribal, but it is all the things you'd want in a good commander card.
Yeah, I agree. Gashath is very good. I would put that as the best new legendary. Best Planeswalker, I think we both agree, is Vraska. I think Jace is actually pretty good, though.
In the infinite, going infinite forever kind of thing?
I think it's okay as a turn three play and make a 2/2.
Yeah, I guess.
It's not horrible. I don't think it's amazing.
I'd rather draw a card.
Yeah, Vraska is 6 mana, so there's a lot more competition at that slot, but all of her stuff is relevant. But the make a 2/2 on Vraska is not as relevant at 6 mana.
No. All right, now let's talk about the best overall card.
This is a showdown.
It's either Spell Swindle, which is the mana drain that gives you treasures, or Growing Rites of Itlamok, which turns into Gaia's Cradle.
So
actually, just saying that sentence.
It's funny because one they basically made a version of Mana Drain and a version of Gaia's Cradle. So
Gaia's Cradle is a little harder to activate, having to have 4 creatures on the battlefield. Spell Swindle is just a 5 mana counterspell, which is a normal price for a lot of counterspells that have like an extra thing tacked on.
But it's crazy we're having this conversation, right? This is a $200 card from 25 years ago. This is a $200 card from 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And these are basically functionally going to do what those cards do.
I think my vote is for Spell Swindle, however.
I agree.
Because I think having 4 creatures for Illamok is just going to be a little too hard. Whereas Spell Swindle, once you have the mana, you're just able to use it to its full potential.
I mean, I think you're going to be able to flip Growing Rites of Itlamok most of the time. But there will be some times where that's a little bit annoying.
Yeah, and it's also end step, so you don't get it that same
Spell
turn.
Spell Swindle's never going to be annoying. You're just going to be like, this is going to be
this
sweet.
This is
going to
be sweet. Yeah.
Spell Swindle is really good.
I want to hold up Desertion and Spell Swindle in the same turn.
Yeah, because you Spell Swindle the first thing, then you use that 5 mana to desertion the next thing.
Or it could be 10 mana. Who knows? It depends on how big the card is that your opponents play. Yeah.
All right, to the listeners, what cards from Ixalan are you most excited about? And for which of your decks are they going into? Are there any cards that we missed that you think we should have talked about? Let us know.
Are there any cards that you would have gone to cardkingdom.com/commandzone to buy instead? That is our affiliate link. Make sure you use it. Thank you to Card Kingdom for being a sponsor for the show. Again, high quality service, very fast shipping. If you're going to pre-order cards from anywhere and want to get them right when the set comes out, essentially, Card Kingdom is going to be the place you want to go to. Cardkingdom.com/commandzone.
We heard that over and over. People were very surprised how fast they got their commander product when they pre-ordered from Card Kingdom. Card Kingdom will get them to you faster than anybody. So pre-order now. The other sponsor for the show is Ultra Pro. If you have one of those cool new planeswalkers like Vraska, you might consider getting these awesome planeswalker specific dice.
They're really cool.
These things are really sweet. They're shaped, they got the little loyalty symbol on them. Also, they make the Eclipse sleeves, like we were saying. They have themed deck boxes, playmats, and sleeves for all the sets, including Ixalan, so that's something to look out for.
These are also just D6, so you can use them as that too.
That's a good point.
Roll it for whatever.
But use them for the loyalty thing. That's why they're cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a reminder, Lifelinker at this point should have an update. So if you have downloaded Lifelinker, make sure you go to the App Store and download the update. We added the very much asked for commander damage and infect. Now, if the update's not there yet, sorry, it should be though.
It should be there now or very, very soon. Again, shooting like 3 weeks in advance. So we believe it will be live by them. If not, it's coming very, very soon. Patreons, of course, you will get the full unlock for free if you haven't already. And in fact, we should put the logo pretty soon available on Lifelinker so that everybody can, you know, have it as one of the downloadable
Good
backgrounds.
Call.
We'll figure out how we're going to make that available to you soon. We don't know, but we'll make it so that you can get that logo.
Yep.
All right. Another logo you can get on the Lifelinker app is the Masters of Modern podcast. They have a cool lightning bolt inside of an O. And that podcast talks about Modern as a format and all things competitive Magic. It is hosted by our good friend Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman. You can find them at the MMcast on Twitter. You can find them on Facebook or the best place, which is right next to us at collected.company.
Yeah. Our editor for the show is Terry Robertson. Make sure you check out the video versions of the podcast at youtube.com/the Command Zone podcast, where you can also watch our game night series, which is, I'd say, the best Magic gameplay ever recorded and put on the internet.
Ever in history.
Ever. Forever. And of course, big thank you to Jeffrey Palmer, who provides the living card animations at the beginning and end of our podcast, as well as a lot of the cool graphical animations inside the Game Nights episodes as well. Jeffrey, awesome guy, and we cannot wait for you to see what he did for the next episode of Game Nights, which is coming up very soon.
September 20th. Make sure you tune in.
Tune in.
Just to my left, Jeffrey's work. It's going to be sweet.
It's going to be sweet.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.